Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 7:18 Central African time. At that time of the morning, where we join our very own Adam Kamda from the Indian Ocean, really revitalizing, refreshing, like a washing machine. Hey, whatever you throw into the Indian Ocean, it churns it out after giving it a good spin. Adam Kamda, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And Jazakallah khair for joining us on your slot, Fishing with Adam on Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. Tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning, Adam?
It's lovely to be on air. As you know, I was planned to go fishing morning, but we cancelled our trip due to the weather. I'm looking out at the sea at the moment, and the forecast was spot on. The waves are pretty close together, which makes the sea very bumpy. It is fishable, but I think we made the right call because I can see signs of the northeaster picking up slowly, and it'll freshen at around 10 or 11 o'clock this morning. So there was a little bit of a gap this morning, but I decided to take the day off from fishing and be on the air with you, Shafaat.
You know what? It's a divine decree. And I was thinking, if Adam doesn't come, so what must I do, this and that? You know, do patchwork, and I don't like doing patchwork. It's like, you know, when you got a brand new tube, and then you have to, you know, when it gets a puncture, then you have to start patching it. But you are like that buoyant. You like, I mean, Adam, talking about tubes, I don't know, as a lighty, did you ever jump into a tube and go into the deep sea? I know I did that once. And what? I got caught in the backwash. I could have drowned. I was about 11 years old. And it's a miracle that brought me to the shores again. Did you ever do that? A dangerous thing of putting a tube around you and going into the Indian Ocean, Adam?
Yes, Shafaat, fond memories of that pink-looking tube that blows up bigger than the normal tire. And we always improvise to have some sort of floating implement to have fun in the ocean. And I was fortunate to have lots of fun in the surf from a very young age, Shafaat.
Alhamdulillah. Yes, the pink tube, people. And every time you look at the garage, is this okay? Don't worry, we'll patch that and give it to you. And you inflated that and you went there and you ran into the shorelines with that big tube. The bigger, the better it was. And sometimes some uncles used to grab onto it. Well, Adam, if you look at this year, you know, it's definitely flying past, and the cooler weather is being broken by some warmer spells in Durban. And talk to me. I mean, it's like we're blinking our eyes and it's another season and another season of fishing, or different, you know, summer, winter, and you're getting different species coming through. That phenomena, you know, and people are changing their tackles to suit the type of fish that comes in seasonally. Talk to me about that phenomena also, Adam.
Yes, Shafaat. Time seems to be flying by faster and faster. I started fishing quite aggressively with lures from December last year, so into the proper summer season. And throw for throw, we should catch bonitos out at number one, Shafaat. And I was just discussing with my good friend Lionel and Skulk that this winter, now we're going to the same spots and we're not getting those bonitos. So we can actually feel the difference in the seasons depending on what species is coming out. And this year, everything seems to be quite well aligned. We've just come through the middle of winter. The garrick are really on the bite on the lower south coast. The sardines are coming through. So everything seems to be matching perfectly to what the forecast would be. And quite rightly, Shafaat, the seasons are flying by. I remember targeting Dorado, on a few trips last year. Our Dorado run wasn't really quite spectacular last year. So I'm hoping that the next season will be great. And can you believe it? It's coming towards spring, and before you know it, our summer fish will be back. That will be the Dorado and the Bonitos, Shafaat.
Yeah, I know. You give me a full, bird's eye view of the Bonitos when they're biting and the Dorados and all that. Alhamdulillah. This is what makes Adam's fishing slot one of the most exciting throughout the world, people. I'm challenging any other reporter to report like Adam. He is the best in the dunya. I think they know the language dunya too. Ardh in Afrikaans, ardh, you know, in Arabic. Now, you know, one of the maybe the toughest questions that you are asked in your shop is, you know, around species. And you, I think they constantly ask you, you know, what catches and what type of bait must I use and what season it is. Even if it's a novice that's coming in, hey, what's biting now and which rod must I buy? How you answer them, Adam?
Yes, Shafaat, that's an age-old question, and especially with a novice, they can't believe that you can actually target a specific fish because they feel you throw your bait out into the ocean and who knows what's going to bite. But it depends, as you said, on the season, the area that you're fishing, the type of bait that you're using, and the trace that you're using. And then also your choice of rod, reel, and line as well, Shafaat. Because I've seen many anglers fishing, for example, in at Blue Lagoon in the estuary there, in the river mouth, casting out soft baits and paddle tails with very stiff rods. And they feel, you know, they've seen the guys do it on YouTube and they catch quite a lot of fish. Why am I not catching fish? And then, you know, you would realize that the line is too thick, the rod is too stiff. You can't use a rod that's designed for surf casting or surf fishing for using, you know, soft bait in the estuary, because it's actually the rod tip and the lightness of the braid that gives that soft bait the action in the water. And what you want is to create a lively action so the fish do not suspect it's artificial and the fish is fooled into thinking this is an easy prey and it looks like live bait and it wants to go and consume it, Shafaat.
You know, Adam, I used to recall these old men coming to the river mouth, you know, the estuary there, and they talk about pink prawns and they say about mud prawns and this prawns, and they used to catch all these things. And they used to use this as live bait during yesterday. I don't know it's like now, you know, if you have evolved or if these are illegal. But talk to me about that culture, you know, pink prawns or sometimes something. Hey, I'm getting bloodworms and mud prawns. I mean, I was innocent. I don't know what the bylaws are. But talk to those that, you know, would like to know about it and share that experience of the fisherman of yesteryear. He was so privileged in having all these live baits and catching maybe better and fresher fish during the yesteryear, Adam.
Yes, Shafaraj. You know, in terms of bait, the easiest thing to do when you're starting fishing, Shafaraj, is to buy frozen bait. And there's a huge variety of frozen bait, like sardines and squid and certain white mussels, various types of baby squid, red prawn, and et cetera. But as you get into it, Shafaraj, you'd realize that fishing with the freshest harvested bait gives you the best bites. And usually you'll be collecting the bait in the beach that you're fishing. So those fish are used to seeking out this type of bait. For example, sea lice, mud prawn, as you mentioned. Mud prawn is also called cracker shrimp in KZN. You could use mussels off the rocks. You could collect red bait off the rocks. So all these types of baits are regulated. For example, if you're collecting mussels, you need to have a license for it, and you are limited to, I think, 30 a day. If you're collecting mud prawns, I think those are also 30 a day or 50 a day, and you need to have a license for that. There are certain organisms that are completely banned, like tapeworm, etc., you know, which is protected. I think fishermen may have removed too many from the environment. So the authorities say, you know, leave that alone to recuperate. So as you rightly mentioned, Shafaat, especially in the Spingo Beach area, I can remember people collecting the most sought after was the sea lice. There's lots of sea lice there, and it's so easy to harvest with the sea lice net. You let the wave wash past you, and as it retreats, you just wiggle your feet in the water and collect all those sea lice into your net, Shafaat.
Hey, you need to come and give me a, like, you know, hands-on demonstration. Look at you, and, you know, I'll make a documentary. This is how you catch a sea lice, people. Watch Adam in action. Yeah, with your Bermudas and you're digging your feet in there. I can feel the water coming in, Adam. And what about, you know, when the water comes in, you know, during maybe high tide and it recedes and goes back, and you see there's holes in the on the shorelines and in the water start bubbling. Are there crabs in that holes, Adam?
Yes, Shafaraj, white crab or ghost crab is also a very, very tasty bait for targeting fish like mussel cracker. So if you look for the indentations in the sand as it retreats, if you see the V shape, that's usually the sea lice that's sinking back down, you know, below the surface of the sand. And those round holes, those bubbling holes, as you mentioned, generally is crab. You can dig them out by hand, Shafaraj, but you know, you very often you'd have to dig right up till your shoulder, so your arm has to go quite deep into the sand to actually grab them. And it takes a bit of resilience of putting your hand down in a dark hole, not knowing if the pincher is going to get your fingers, but that's all part of the fun. I did that as a young kid growing up. But the easier way to collect those ghost crabs, Shafaraj, is to dig a hole, place like a little white bucket inside and add a few sardines. They leave it overnight, and you'll find these crabs will fall into the bucket, seeking out the scent of the crab, and they won't be able to climb back out of the plastic bucket. So that's a very easy way without getting your pinches on your fingers so far.
Yeah, I remember my late dad, Allah Feliz Kabar, with Noor and grant him Jannatul Firdaus. I mean, he passed at a young age of 35. So yeah, I remember him. He used to take this, what they call this, paraffin gallons, you know. And I remember he'll come in the morning, hey, full of crabs, his white crabs. And he used to do exactly what you say. But today the people have been made everything plasticated. So it's the plastic bucket that does it. But, you know, as you said, you know, when you look at these crabs and you're like, you go towards them, they're ready for a para, like, you know, like a boxer with a southpaw. You reckon, you come here and you watch what I'm going to do, and the pinches come out, Adam. So the best way of handling them is, how do you do it? With gloves on, or you just grab them from the side or from the back? Talk to us, Adam.
Yes, Shafaj, you could press them down from the top and just hold them firmly from behind. So the pinches can't reach to the back. So once you grab, holding them from the back, it's pretty safe. But the smaller ones, Shafat, you know, even if they give you a little nip or two, it's not so serious. It's the big rock crabs that can probably inflict quite serious damage. But as you rightly said, you know, you can use some protective gear, use some rubber gloves. There's a whole variety of gloves available to fishermen, you know, from normal fishing gloves to even garden gloves will all do the trick, Shafat.
Now, Adam, let's talk about the designer label fisherman, you know, who comes there with the whole, like, the best rod in the on the shoreline with these lovely shades and, you know, lovely cap and all that. Is like, it's all, look at me, I'm brand, and he's looking for you know, compliments. He's fishing for compliments, but he doesn't catch a single fish. What name do you have for that type of fisherman?
Yes, Chef, fishing, you know, caters for everyone, whether you are a beginner with a very low budget, or whether you've been in the game for many years and you spend all your spare cash on your passion and your hobby. So I firmly believe that, you know, when you're starting out in fishing, you don't need to go for the real top end, paying 8,000 Rand for a rod and 20,000 Rand for a reel, because you won't really... As a beginner, you won't really feel or notice the difference between the beginner tackle and the expert tackle. My advice is to buy medium tackle. So if it gets bounced around on the rocks and things, you know, you're not going to get too upset. And then as you learn about fishing, as you're able to understand the difference between the medium tackle and the expensive tackle, and that you're getting a little bit better distance out of casting with this rod and reel combo, etc., then you upgrade. So you learn the tackle, you outgrow the tackle. So when you invest in the real top-end stuff, you know, you are understanding and you're appreciating and you're getting the full value out of that top-end tackle, Shafaz. But having said that, you would find fishing is a great leveler. You know, you could have a person togged up to the T with his UV-protected long-sleeve shirt and fancy sunglasses and hats and special, you know, tights to wade into the water, and all the bells and whistles with the latest technology rod and reel. And then you'll have someone, you know, beside him, humble soul, you know, who's trying to feed his family. And that person might hook a bigger fish than the guy with all the expert tackle. So that's why I say fishing is a great leveler. Fishing doesn't care who you are, how old you are, how young you are, how rich you are, or whatever, or even what your color is. If you present your bait the right way, you know, you stand a great chance of catching a great fish, no matter what tackle you're using, Japan.
Now, good point indeed. And, you know, I recently got into this habit of walking about every, you know, twice in the week from Rivermouth to Runian Rocks. You know, where's Runian Rocks, and there's the canal there and that. And I stood one of the days and looked into the canal. It looks so refreshing. The water looks very good. And I looked, there were a lot of fish in there, Adam. And I said, hey, maybe I need to take a drive to Adam, buy a, you know, rod. And this park here, maybe for half an hour when I do my walks and pull something out. Is that a good idea, Adam?
Yes, Chef. Talking about life in the ocean, I have been blown away. Our last trip out to sea, we saw so much of life and such unusual sightings. Early in the morning, we saw a shoal of garfish, you know, jumping out of the water, breaking the surface, and they almost look like seahorses, you know, jumping into the air and then plonking back into the water. So we saw the shoal of garfish just swimming happily. They didn't look like they were being chased by predator fish, but just, you know, gracefully jumping out of the water in a whole row. It's so hard to describe. You know, I can just picture the scene in my mind, but it's so hard to describe it. It, you know, we just stood there in awe watching the sight. Then later in the morning, we saw a shoal of flying fish breaking the surface and flying with the waves towards the shore. It actually wasn't on the waves. It was the swells, you know, like riding the swells in the air. They were tiny. They must have been like 10 centimeters each, and they looked like little locusts flying past. And then later in the day, we saw whales. A few whales came right up close to the boat. I managed to get some good video footage of them. And they looked curious because most of them were swimming north. These whales came up close to the boat, swimming south to north, and then turned around. And they seemed to have swum virtually under the boat as well. And there was a tiny little whale calf swimming with them, Shepard. I don't know if it was the mother whale teaching the little one, you know, this is what a boat looks like and keep your distance from them, you know, look out for the propeller, that it can be dangerous, et cetera, Shepard. So the sea is full of life at the moment. Even the netters contacted me last week. I think they netted around Thursday morning time. And they said that some of the shoals or patches of shoals are caught in the drain. It's like trapped in the drain, so what, which means that they've come in shallow enough between the breaking water, you know, of the sandbanks and the shore break on the shore itself. And you know, I've seen video footage of the guys on the shore with casting nets out and catching sardines, and even the netters. There's a technique called a swim net, where the instead of using a boat to set the net, one of the netters would actually swim that net out around that trapped shoal of sardines and pull them to shore, Shepard. So the ocean really is full of life at the moment.
You sounded like William Wordsworth there, describing the ocean with so much of superlatives that I was, it's mind-blowing, Adam. You know what, you're a master, you can write a whole book on the ocean. And you know what, whilst you're talking and I was thinking, you know, maybe I hit my own poem here. I wandered lonely as a fisherman down the Indian Ocean, when all at once I saw a slick, I saw a cloud, and I looked into the water, and it was a whole shoal of mullets. I threw in my net, they I caught with white bread and masala. I fried them all and ate them now. Beautiful ocean, Indian Ocean. You like that, Adam?
Yes, you've combined fishing and good food in one poem, Shepard. That sounds excellent. And it really captures the images of being down in the ocean and catching your own meal, Shepard.
Now we resonate. Idris, yeah, I'm talking to you. Idris Khamis, I'm talking to you, sir. Yeah, absolutely. Idris says, remind Adam, I taught him English. That's why he's so good. Hey, your teacher is happy with you, Adam. He's so happy. Now, I'm wondering, Adam, every fisherman that goes on the Indian Ocean, that goes on the shoreline, must he have a permit for each rod?
Yes, Shepard, you, as an angler, you need to have a permit. So it's not for each rod. As long as you have a fishing permit, then you're allowed to catch fish on the shore. Well, it's valid in the inland waters like the Durban Harbour, from the shore, or from any beach, and even on a boat. But when you're on a boat, one person on the boat needs to have a separate license, which is for the boat, and it's usually the skipper that will have that license. So if you're joining someone on a boat, you know, you need to carry your fishing permit with you, Shepard. And then when you buy the permit, they usually give you a pamphlet specifying the size limits and the bag limits of all the different species of fish. So it's advisable to make yourself familiar with the different species to be able to recognize what you're catching. So when you do catch something, you know, if you will know whether it's on the allowed list or not. And even if it is on the allowed list but you don't recognize it, it's better to release that fish. Take a picture, release it, and then share that picture with friends to ask them to help you identify it. So the next time you catch it, you know whether it's a keeper or whether it's compulsory to release, Shepard.
So if I come and buy a tackle from you, a rod and this and that, I can't get my permit from you. I will have to go and make a special application for that.
Yes, Shepard, it's a very easy process. You just pop into the post office and you tell them which license you want. There's a whole range of boxes there to tick. For example, You can choose a fishing license, bait license, cast net license, spear fishing license, rock lobster license, boat license, etc. But having said that, it's theoretically a very simple process, but now with all the post offices closing, we don't know what the future holds, whether they will, forgive anglers for fishing without a fishing license because it's not obtainable, or for a while until, it's made clear where we can obtain fishing licenses again. I'll have to face this issue because my license expires next month. So next month I'll be looking around to see which post office is still open and has forms. Even having those fishing forms has been quite a challenge for anglers because most post offices, even while they were open, didn't have forms. So there are a few challenges, facing anglers to remain legal and to continue fishing, Shafat.
And the worst part is you go into a post office and say, sorry, we offline. I said, hey, come and use my internet at home. You offline, you come. And the postmaster laughs. Hey, chap, what are you telling me to use? But, you're offline all the time. And, then you get delayed and you say, I came to pay for my post box. And you won't believe it. My post box, they got a credit in the post office. I said, keep the change. I'll come on Monday and we'll renew. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It might be. He's still renewing it. Every time I go, he's offline. So I don't know. But maybe your fishing permit, maybe he's got. I'm going to find out from him. Stingo Beach. You can come to this guy. His name is Mervyn. Or maybe I'll give you the number. And you can say, hey, Mervyn, can I get my... I'm going to talk to him about that. But Adam, I think you've got our recipe ready this morning. And it's a fried chicken. Bismillah.
Yes, Chef, I decided to give a break from the fish today. And we'll do a lovely battered fried chicken. This is quite a detailed recipe, but it's still very simple, Shafad. It just takes a little bit extra time for prep. So you start with 3 drumsticks, add this to a pot, and add the following: half a cup of milk, 1/3 cup water, 1 bay leaf, 2 whole cloves of garlic, and 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, and some salt. Bring this all this through to a boil, then cook covered on low heat for 7 to 8 minutes. Then remove the chicken and add the following spices: 1 teaspoon chili powder, 1/2 teaspoon dhania powder, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, 1/2 teaspoon onion powder, 1/4 teaspoon garlic powder, and some salt. Then add 1 teaspoon of vinegar. Give it all a good mix till the chicken is well coated. Then for the batter, start with 3/4 cup flour, add some salt, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, 1/4 teaspoon garlic powder. Mix this well. Coat the chicken pieces one by one in the flour. Then dip it in cold water and coat it a second time. Then fry this in medium oil till golden brown and serve.
I tell you, Adam, I'm writing the recipe down because I'm going to try it out this morning. But alhamdulillah, chicken, you get variations of chicken. But people today, I mean, you spoke about the drumstick. Many forget the flavors that you get in a drumstick. It is like an occasion to eat a drumstick because everyone say fillet, 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 and they talk about breast, but they forget the drumstick. Adam, talk to them about this.
Yes, I don't know if you remember the movie Bonanza. There was this one guy named Horse who loved drumsticks. When I think of drumsticks, I think of horse, and he used to guzzle them down like a horse as well, Shafat. Yes, the drumstick holds a lot of flavor, and I want to actually adapt this recipe. I've been looking for something like this for a long time. I want to adapt this recipe and make it like I'll bake chicken. So I'd add some peri-peri oil to the marinade after the chicken is boiled in the milk. The boiling in the milk helps to tenderize it. So I'm going to add some peri-peri oil, add extra of the vinegar, and more chili powder to make it spicy and tangy, and then coat it with that batter and fry it, Shafad.
It'll go brilliant, and alhamdulillah. A chicken, I mean, who doesn't turn down a chicken? Everyone says, yeah, I want chicken, I want meat. Some go for the steaks and so forth. But I'm looking at a question on the screen for you, Adam, and it's from Afzal. He says, Assalamu alaikum, Brew Chef. When you and Adam talk, we don't want to disturb you guys. You guys are so good. But for my question, I want to know about seasonal visitors to our shores. How often do we get them, and what are the numbers? That's a very good question from Afzal, Adam.
What visitors, Shafat? I didn't get that.
Seasonal visitors coming to
Durban.
Yeah.
Yes, Shafat, every school holiday we have an abundance of visitors coming to Durban. And you know what? We really need them. We need to welcome them. We need to be more amicable. They're not an annoyance. They're not disturbing the peace. All our hotels and restaurants really, you know, need that income, especially after everything that we've been through with COVID, with things being shut down. So we need to do everything in our power to encourage tourism, whether it's overseas visitors or local visitors. But things have been pretty quiet from our observations in Durban recently, Shafat. So we need to do everything in our power to make our Durban attractions more attractive to all visitors. And we love seeing them on the beach. You know, I notice them in the shop when it comes to fishing tackle. You get a lot of visitors who don't know much about fishing. They just buy the basic, you know, like a budget combo tackle and use it for that holiday, and probably leave it behind in the chalet or even give it to someone deserving on the beach apart. So we look forward to these visitors, and we do hope that the numbers increase in the holidays ahead, Shafat.
Now, I tell you, Adam, you're an ambassador for Durban. I mean, we do our share here. I mean, your podcast goes around the globe. And you should submit it to Itikweni Tourism and say, listen, I'm a brand master. My name is Adam Kamda. You see my shops there in Township. Yeah, you put my emblem there. Tourism friendly, Adam Kamda, Township Hyper. How's that, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, I do have quite a following on my personal page and the shop page. And one of my passions is photography, and I love sharing the morning sunrise. And it appeals to so many different people. You know, there's a page called Port of Durban. They always publish the pictures. There's a page called Weather Southern Africa. So they also, you know, get to see what Durban looks like, whether you're from all parts of South Africa. And all the fishing, surfing, paddle ski guys all log in to see what the conditions are. Number one, to just admire the beauty of the sunrise. And number two, to actually see what the conditions are so they know whether they can go out and it's actually, you know, suitable to launch or for fishing or paddle skiing or surfing. So it appeals to a wide range of people, Shafat, and that's what I love about social media. And it gives me the ability to share the view that I have every morning, Shafat.
I know you, when you send me those photos of those birds, you're catching them in pairs. That's how good you are. Like, you don't want to make the male and female feel like, hey, you left me out. All your pictures, you got the pair flying there. And what I do, I send it to all my cousins, you know, that are living in the US and some living in Canada, some living there in Ireland, another one in Italy and all that. You know, I have a very cosmopolitan family. And you know what they tell me, Adam? I'm going to say it like this. They tell me, wow. Like, you know, it's a wow picture. So keep it up, Adam. And perhaps your parting words this morning.
Yes, thanks, Shafat. Thanks for that compliment. Really appreciate it. And I'd just like to encourage all the listeners to welcome everyone down to Durban during the school holidays and really try and encourage tourism, help the local restaurants and hotels as well. Thanks for a lovely show, Shafat. Salams to you and the listeners.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.